making TV special.
Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means?
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
Well, if this is where love's gone, then baby, we gotta talk about it.
The song surrounds me and all I'm seeing are the dark times. The song surrounds me and all I'm seeing are the dark times. I'm telling you love so we can see it through.
Still your memories of the days before.
From their fantastic 2001 album, Once We Were Trees, that band is called Beechwood Sparks, and the sun surrounds me. And yes, it does all of us, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this B-side, episode 182 from Media Monarchy. It's August 20th, 2010. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. And on this B-side episode, we're going to go over all the other alternative media that isn't up on the main site. We're going to go over my sister sites, foodworldorder.com and firstcyberspacewar.com for all the attacks on inner space and outer space. Let's get right into flashback flares and jackal hacktivism. And we're going to start it off with a piece brought to me by shtfplan.com. Shit hit the fanplan.com. Top physicist says a solar flare would set us back 100 years.
Should we be worried about increasing solar activity? Michio Kaku is here with one of, he's obviously the professor. We all know him of theoretical physics. He's also the host of the sci-fi science show on the Science Channel, which is based on his book, Physics of the Impossible. Professor, should we be worried about these flare-ups? When talking about this morning, we all kind of agreed it has that Y2K feeling, like it could happen. But if it doesn't, we're going to spend a lot of money for nothing.
Hmm. Well, we had a wake-up call just 2 weeks ago. Giant auroras, northern lights as far as Michigan and Wisconsin. And that's a warm-up for 2012-2013 when we hit the sunspot cycle. Every 11 years, the North Pole and the South Pole of the sun flip, releasing a burst of radiation. But every 100 years or so, a monster tsunami from the sun emerges, which could literally cause trillions of dollars in property damage.
2012, that's a presidential election year. We need to keep that in mind. But if I'm walking around out there, yeah, as to whose fault it is, or at least the history, who they'll blame. So if I'm walking around, if I'm out sunbathing in a Speedo, will I look like Charles after about 5 minutes out there? Color, anyways. So obviously, I'm not going to look like Charles in a Speedo, but you know what I'm saying. I mean, is it going to really affect us like that?
I just went from bad to worse.
It could paralyze the economy of the planet Earth.
But not from a physical perspective.
Physical perspective, yeah. 1859, we had a gigantic solar storm which knocked out telegraph wires back then, 150 years ago. Yeah. If that had happened today, it would knock out almost all our satellites, knock out power stations. There would be food riots around the country because refrigeration would stop. Airplanes would probably crash without radar. It would paralyze the planet Earth. $2 trillion in property damage. And again, this is a once in two century storm. The last one was 1859. But we do have them, and we have to worry about them.
That's a pretty high probability, once in two centuries.
Do we get a warning? I mean, is it like, hey, in 2 hours this happens, in 2 days this happens, in 2 weeks this happens? I mean, if the flare takes place, what kind of warning will we have to go to the other side of the Earth?
And who do you sue?
I'll figure that out. I got that.
Mark can tell you that later.
I got that covered, okay?
This is an act of God.
Oh, by the way, Mitchell, you might want to sign a waiver before you leave, because Mark has you on his list already.
You have now put corporate America on notice. They are responsible for taking preparations. Go ahead, sir.
We have virtually no warning. It's like a giant earthquake. You can't predict giant earthquakes. They happen on a scale of once every 100, 200 years. That's what we have to worry about. We physicists have been telling Congress. We have to reinforce our power stations. We have to have redundancy in our telecommunication systems, our satellites. Several of our satellites apparently have already been knocked out or at least disrupted because of solar flares. The space station has to worry about solar flares. But a giant one, like I said, could wipe out power stations on the Earth, wipe out communications, the internet, radar, airplane travel. It would be a mess. We'd be thrown back 100 years.
But are any steps being taken to, if God forbid this happens?
In Congress, there is a bill to pass a paltry $100 million. It's stalled in Congress right now. It's an insurance policy. It would cost very little to begin the process of reinforcing our transformers, power stations. And remember, this does happen even periodically. In 2003 in South Africa, 14 power stations were wiped out because a solar flare hit South Africa. In Canada, the city of Quebec was partially paralyzed, again, about 10, 15 years ago because of a solar flare. These things happen. But the monster one is the one that we physicists are worried about.
Okay, before I get to you, we've got some breaking news here on mortgage rates. They're falling to their lowest level in decades. For the eighth time in 9 weeks, Freddie Mac says that the average 30-year fixed mortgage is now 4.42%. Wow. Before we let you go, Professor Kaku, how much would this cost to prevent a guesstimate? Because the president is really enamored with scientists, a lot more than his predecessor. It seems that you can get the message through to the president. And do you think it will? Do you think you can? And how much will it cost us?
Well, you know, as part of the stimulus package, this would be chump change to give us $100 million.
That's your
just
number.
Just to reinforce power stations. Satellites will take more effort. We have to launch satellites that are reinforced to handle these things.
Do you have any connections with the White House personally?
Not personally, but
I'm really surprised that you haven't been invited there. You're like one of the top science guys in the country. Maybe after the show. Listen, we're going to have to let you go. Okay. This is just, it's frightening stuff, but it's also things that we should be aware of. And coming from you, you add a lot of credibility to it.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Now, Fox buffoonery aside, well-known physicist Michio Kaku, that last name is K-A-K-U, and that's a clip from Fox Business News Channel. And we've talked about CMEs, talked about solar flares, and even talked about EMPs, and that's something that we try and focus on, cyberspacewar.com. And that's where we're at. And as we head down the list of flashback flares and jackal hacktivism, we've got another Sun article, this one from Washington's blog, on how the sun affects us more than we might think. And again, we're only going to learn more about this as time goes by and as we get to these cycles and dates. But in the cyber world, you can call it Operation Ajax Truth. Iranian activists deface UK genetics website. This is, of course, in honor of the anniversary. It happened on August 19th, 1953. That would be Operation Ajax. It's now been declassified. Kermit Roosevelt wrote about it, bragged about it, that the CIA helped overthrow the democratically elected leader of Iran, Mohammad Mossadegh, educated in the West. And it comes down to, he didn't want to play ball. He wanted to nationalize. He wanted to actually keep some of the resources for the people there. So, more on that from 911blogger.com, and you should know some history about Operation Ajax. But if we hop to theregister.co.uk, the author of Day of the Jackal and the Odessa File, who's author and journalist, Frederick Forsyth, blames the NSA for his wife's laptop hack. Novelist Frederick Forsyth has accused heavy-handed U.S. cyber spies of destroying his wife's computer in an attempt to tap into copy he was filing for the Daily Express while in West Africa. The author of The Day of the Jackal and the Odessa File made the bizarre claim during a recent interview with the BBC TV program Hard Talk. Forsyth told the program that he arrived in the West African state of Guinea-Bissau to research an upcoming novel to find the country in the middle of a coup following the assassination of an army chief. Forsyth wrote a story on the unfolding events for the Daily Express, UK tabloid paper, for which he writes an occasional column, and began to dictate his copy over the telephone to London before computer disaster struck. The novelist reckons that U.S. spooks not only listened into his conversation, but hacked into his wife's laptop, incompetently drawing attention to their nefarious activities by totaling the machine. Forsyth went on to say, and we do have links, and you can go listen to the interview and check it out. Forsyth went on to say that he has friends in low places who confirmed his suspicions that his spouse's PC was the target of a remote attack. A pre-existing malware infection seems far more likely, though, as security consultant Graham Cluley of Sophos points out, the idea that the NSA might be listening to international telephone calls from a country in the middle of a coup seems more than likely, but the remote blow-up yarn is wildly implausible. Perhaps Forsyth was retelling a story he'd earlier used to placate his wife for a damaged machine or to explain the tardiness or non-arrival of his copy. Now, of course, the Register always has snarky articles, and we're going to have more on that in the main episode 183 coming up very soon. But our last bit here on this DEFCON 819 flashback flares and jackal hacktivism. WikiLeaks says Pentagon offers Afghan files help. This is from the CBC. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, you know, the guy who's annoyed by 9/11 truth, said this past Wednesday, the 18th, that the Pentagon has expressed willingness to discuss the online whistleblower's request for help in reviewing classified documents from the Afghan war and removing information that could harm civilians. The Pentagon denied any direct contact with WikiLeaks. This week, we received contact through our lawyers that the General Counsel of the Pentagon says now that they want to discuss the issue, Assange told the AP. Pentagon spokesman Brian Whitman denied any direct contacts between the Pentagon and WikiLeaks. He said the Pentagon is not interested in cooperating with WikiLeaks. Of course, this all swirling around the recent Afghan war diaries and how that all exploded into so many more things that essentially seemed to point the finger to more war with Pakistan, which, of course, our Prince of Peace Prize will be more than happy to supply for his bankster overlords. But if we keep moving through cyberspacewar.com from Computer World, Apple manager arrested over $1 million in kickbacks. An Apple manager with responsibilities for the company's contract manufacturing in Asia was arrested last Friday and charged with accepting kickbacks. Global Supply Manager Paul Shin Devine was charged with accepting $1 million in kickbacks from half a dozen Asian suppliers of iPhone and iPod accessories. So says a federal indictment and a civil suit with links to MercuryNews.com. Devine allegedly was paid for sharing confidential Apple info with contractors that helped them win Apple business on favorable terms. The Wall Street Journal reports that Devine gave confidential information to companies like Crescent in South Korea, Cater Electronics in China, and Jinli Mold Manufacturing in Singapore. He allegedly shared the kickbacks with Andrew Ang, an employee of Jinli, who the indictment charges helped broker deals with his employer and others. Meanwhile, Apple, last Friday the 13th, sued Devine in a case in U.S. District Court in San Jose. More from KeenObservers.com, and he was scheduled to appear last Monday in front of a court. Kickbacks and leaks and schemes. And of course, should always remember, it's the bitten apple. Yes, of course, it's what I'm using now. It's what lets me do this. But you shouldn't miss the symbols. Like Saul Williams says, no one seems to recognize the symbols come to life. The bitten apple on the screen. And Jesus had a wife. We'll get into Jesus and John the Baptist later. But for now, coming from Threat Level, an unfortunate update on a story we've been tracking since it broke this past February. And we do have the flashback links going back to February and April of this year. But no charges in Pennsylvania schools webcam spygate. And we will note at the top a related article by way of the Telegraph where Google CEO Eric Schmidt notes that young people today are going to have to change their names in the future to escape their cyber past that is being built up and in most cases, in a lot of cases, willingly given away. So, I think that fits quite well with no charges in Pennsylvania schools. Webcam Spygate. Federal authorities announced Tuesday, August 17, 2010, they will not prosecute administrators connected to a webcam spying scandal at a suburban Philadelphia school district. Prosecutors and the FBI opened an inquiry following a February privacy lawsuit accusing Lower Marion School District officials of spying on students with webcams on the 2,300 district-issued MacBooks. The lawyers who filed the lawsuit claim the district secretly snapped thousands of webcam images of students, including images of youths at home, in bed, or even partially dressed. Zane David Mimiger, the U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Pennsylvania, said he found no criminal intent in the alleged surveillance. I have concluded that bringing criminal charges is not warranted in this matter, Mimiger said in a statement. For the government to prosecute a criminal case, it must prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the person charged acted with criminal intent. We have not found evidence that would establish beyond a reasonable doubt that anyone involved had criminal intent. It came out that they took tens of thousands of photos and treated these kids as if it were a reality show. Oh, hey, I can't wait to see what Johnny's getting into tonight. There were emails. They laughed about it. It may not have been criminal in the way that this guy's talking about. They weren't using it to try and blackmail someone or use it for some other scheme. And the article does go on to kind of explicate some of that information. And like I said, we do have all the flashback links for you can fully go through this disgusting story. So you essentially have the guy who works for the state on the Fed level saying that the feds are saying it's not illegal to spy on kids through laptops, falsely using the reported missing. That was supposed to be the thing that would actually kick in the surveillance. They didn't even wait to do that. Negligence on multiple levels. But I digress, and we don't have time to keep going into this story. You should be disgusted. And I suppose this next story ties in, as we need someone to ask. Once someone think of the children, Disney and Warner Brothers and more spied on children's web surfing habits, users' profiles, bought and sold on the stock on a stock market-like exchange. This from Raw Story, a class action lawsuit, and that's what I was going to say about the previous story about Pennsylvania. There may not be criminal charges, but I hope a lot of families are going to sue the hell out of them. A class action lawsuit filed in a federal court last week alleges that Disney and other large corporations spied on visitors to their websites using flash cookies installed on users' browsers. The lawsuit filed in a U.S. District Court in Cali on behalf of a group of parents and their children alleges that ClearSpring, a company contracted by Disney, Warner Brothers, Playlist.com, and other websites, used its Add This webpage tool to install flash cookies in computer browsers, which would then track individual computer users. According to CNET, the lawsuit states these cookies can't be erased using the usual methods of erasing browser history because they're built on flash technology. Additionally, SecPoint.com reports that these flash cookies can even undelete or respawn regular cookies that were erased by the user. Once installed, these small pieces of software track users across numerous websites, even spotting and tracking users when they access the web from different computers at home and at work. Disney and Warner spying on kids. And even if it's not a sinister Orwellian, which of course it all is, they all... what I'm saying is when Big Brother comes in, they just say, but it's just for better advertising. Our final story on cyberspacewar.com is perhaps the most important, and this is a story that we followed on Media Monarchy. We've now cross-posted it to Cyberspace War. Hate blogger Hal Turner burned by the government he served. Racist, provocateur radio host Hal Turner, of course, worked for the FBI. This story's been going on for over a year now. And let's take it from Kurt Nimmo. On last Friday, the 13th, a jury found National Security Intelligence asset Hal Turner guilty of threatening to kill a judge. Prosecutors argued the former radio host threatened to kill federal judges Richard Posner, William Bauer, and Frank Easterbrook after they upheld a law banning handguns in Chicago. Quote, "Let me be the first to say this plainly, these judges deserve to be killed," end quote, Turner posted on his website in June 2009. He also posted the judges' phone numbers and office addresses. Two previous attempts by the government to convict Turner resulted in mistrials with deadlocked juries. After the third time is the charm, and Turner's conviction and possible 10-year prison term is yet another example of the government habitually burning trusted assets. This was a guy stirring up homegrown errorism, but of course, and as this threat level and some of the articles that we link to barely point out the fact that it was proven that he was an FBI informant. He was a national security intelligence asset. False flag activity. That's how they roll. And we see that during the phony conservative puppet years, they'll infiltrate peace groups. And then during phony Democrat progressive years, they'll infiltrate the right-wing reactionaries. But let's continue the Kurt Nimmo article. Turner was not a garden variety operative working for the FBI. He was a national security intelligence asset and worked for the FBI on, quote, national security, terrorism, foreign counterintelligence. There are people that are giving info that affects the national security of the United States, terrorism matters that are going to affect the population or people overall, something that's really going to hinder and hurt a large group of people or the national security of the U.S., Assistant Special Agent in Charge Amy Pickett, the third highest ranking FBI official in New York City, said in December 09. His code name, Hal Turner's code name, was Valhalla, and he, quote, received thousands of dollars from the FBI to report on such groups as the Aryan Nations and the White Supremacist National Alliance, and even a member of the Blue-Eyed Devil's Skinhead punk band. This according to the Record, North Jersey Record. Turner's service was apparently so valuable to the government that he was sent to Brazil, where he reported on a scheme to send non-military supplies to Iraqi resistance fighters. Governments burning formerly prized minions and those who follow illegal directives is nothing new. After Secretary of Defense Ronald Rumsfeld issued orders to torture Iraqi detainees in violation of the Geneva Convention, a number of military personnel were prosecuted. 11 soldiers convicted of various charges relating to torture at Abu Ghraib. 2 soldiers, Specialist Charles Grainer and his former fiancée, Specialist Lindy England, unfortunately non-representative of my home state of West Virginia. They were both sentenced to 10 and 3 years in prison, respectively. In 1934, however, Hitler betrayed and had the Gestapo murder trusted members of the Brown Shirts, the paramilitary group responsible for engaging in terror and mass murder as Hitler ascended to power. The measures taken on June 30th, July 1st, and 2nd to suppress treasonous assaults are legal as acts of self-defense by the state, Hitler declared after the Gestapo killed hundreds of people. In much the same way, formerly trusted operative Hal Turner was declared a threat to the state, although he has yet to suffer the same fate as somebody like Ernst Röhm, the leader of the Brown Shirts, who was assassinated. If anything, the case of Hal Turner should serve as a warning to anybody considering cooperating with the government in its ongoing effort to infiltrate and neutralize, as the late FBI boss and cross-dressing J. Edgar Hoover characterized the actions in COINTELPRO, Counterintelligence Program. And there you have it. And there you have all the latest on cyberspacewar.com. Before we move to foodworldorder.com, we want to look at some of my other favorite alternative media that I'm honored to be connected to in any way. My man Clyde Lewis, groundzeromedia.org, his latest episode, Eschaton, as in eschatology, as in eschatology would be the study of the end of days. Getting into the Ground Zero Mosque and Barack Hussein Obama and all that that entails. And those episodes, of course, are available from ZeroPointRadio.com. We thank any and all of you guys who have supported and donated to ZeroPointRadio.com, keeping alternative independent media on the air, in the air, in the cloud. Posted along with this is a quick video that my man Mike of GroundZeroTV.org shot while Clyde was doing a show live at KUFO here in Portland, 101.1 FM. That is linked up. They're now on Ustream, as we have been streaming and capturing videos for the last several months here on Media Monarchy, spreading the word through as many different ways as we can. Sometimes through writing, sometimes through audio, sometimes through video. Any way to spread all of this kind of open source info. Also posted along here is episode 264 from my man Alex Ansari of Outside the Box with guest Michael Sunanda. James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, episode 142 on the underpopulation crisis, getting into the overpopulation myth, the grim realities, demographic winter, all that and so much more. Fascinating episode. All his other recent interviews with Eric Schein, Aidan Monahan, Chris and Cherie, Black Hats, Anthony Flamia, should, if you notice a theme there, be prepping for a 9/11 anniversary episode coming, of course, unfortunately, very soon, the 9th anniversary of the catalyzing catastrophic event. Remember, James Corbett also does the fantastic Sunday update. Last Sunday, August 15th, Trust the Billionaires and Chemical Attack. All that and so much more, CorbettReport.com, and especially don't miss YouTube.com/CorbettReport. What connects with that, of course, is the latest episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com, the weekly video series between myself and James Corbett. Amazingly enough, I was at work the other night. It was crunch time. It was the last hour or so trying to get everything taken care of. And I saw a guy walk by a few times and finally came back to me. He's like, "Are you James Evan Pilato?" And I kind of blush and know that he probably recognized me from NewWorldNextWeek.com. He was passing through. So, hat tip and thanks to my man Adam from Austin, wherever you may be out there. And that's what's so amazing about doing all of this kind of citizen journalism, alternative media, blogging, whatever you want to call it. Spreading this information as far and wide as we can. And again, making these real world connections. So the latest episode of New World Next Week is up and available. And you should always check out the posts on MediaMonarchy.com that spread out to Archive.org and RadioForAll.net and Blip.tv. All the ways that, again, we try and build in the redundancy to send out super high quality versions of New World Next Week, lower quality versions, versions that'll go on your iPod, just the straight MP3 version. More and more ways to, again, hopefully easily make all of this filter out and hopefully go more and more and more viral. So we go over war whores, and that's something major with the powder kegs looking for a spark that we're going to get into on the upcoming episode 183. And we also get into the Hal Turner story that we just covered on cyberspacewar.com. Paid informants, of course, always get burned by the corrupt that they serve. And the third story we covered on newworldnextweek.com is the first story we're going to cover on foodworldorder.com. And this is one that seems kind of simple and seems kind of silly, but ultimately I think is really important and a positive story. We have to look for those and take them where we can get them sometimes. But coming from allgov.com, wheat bread sales top white bread for the first time. First time in consumer history, Americans are buying more wheat bread than white bread. From July 09 to July 10, sales of wheat bread increased 0.6%, totaling $2.6 billion, as white bread sales declined 7% to $2.5 billion. Americans seem to be turning to wheat bread for its healthier nutritional value. Declining sales of white bread have hurt longtime producers like Sara Lee, whose sales dipped 10% from last year. The company is reportedly up for sale. Other brands that are hurting include Hostess's Wonder Bread. I would say the ugly king of unhealthy white bread. They're down 5%. And Bimbo's Stroheim. Bimbo's actually being, I believe, a Mexican company. They're down 6%. And the photo that I include links over to daveskillerbread.com. And they're an independent bread company here in Portland, Oregon. And this is something, again, that we get into in the latest newworldnextweek.com about the wheat bread. You can find his whole story. There's a great, actually, 10-minute little bio video done on Dave. Ex-con, in and out of trouble for tons of his life. Long story short, turned it around, got into the family business, and started his own bread label. I eat it every day. I wholeheartedly endorse Dave's Killer Bread. And, again, I feel fortunate to be, at least currently, in a place that has so much locally produced food that is of good quality. Non-GMO, totally organic, and it's local. As we've discussed, I think, briefly from time to time, it's perhaps more important to be local than it is to necessarily be organic. And I guess that segues nicely into our next story from naturalnews.com. Junk food addicted rats would rather starve than eat healthy food. A diet including unlimited amounts of junk food can cause rats to become so addicted to the unhealthy diet that they'll starve themselves rather than go back to eating healthy food. In a series of studies conducted over the course of 3 years and published in the journal Nature Neuroscience, Scripps, Florida scientists Paul Johnson and Paul Kenny have shown that rats' response to unlimited junk food closely parallels well-known patterns of drug addiction, even down to the changes in brain chemistry. Quote, "What we have are these core features of addiction, and these animals are hitting each one of these features," end quote, Paul Kenny said. And this is a follow-up on some of the work that these guys were doing. I believe we briefly reported at some point in the last couple of months that it already was mimicking something like being addicted to heroin. Our next post from the BBC, cattle cloned from dead animals to produce that memorable taste.
The head of America's leading animal cloning companies told BBC News that European farms will fall behind the rest of the world unless they're allowed to use cloned livestock for milk and beef. Our science correspondent, Pallab Ghosh, has been to the United States to follow the trail of the cloned cattle from the laboratory to the plate.
Just one day old, this newborn calf takes its first tentative steps into what some say will be a brave new world for American agriculture. His father was a clone. Around him are fellow offspring, nurtured by their natural mothers, but sired by genetically superior cloned bulls. The herd is part of an experiment by one of America's leading meat producers. His aim is to raise the standard of the great American steak.
The notion behind what we're doing here is that we want to find that animal that created that great steak. And once we find that animal, we want to reproduce it.
So could these be the perfect steaks? They're from the Simplot Ranch, cuts from the offspring of clones whose meat has been judged to be of exceptional quality.
2 years ago, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration said that meat and milk from cloned animals was safe to eat. Since then, food from the offspring of clones has entered the human food chain, and here, people seem to like it.
These bulls were cloned from the carcass of a dead animal. It was only when it was dead that specialist tasters could tell that its meat was of exceptional quality. Although the technology's further down the line here, most Americans don't know about it, and Whole Foods supermarkets refuse to sell the meat originating from clones.
A lot of customers in the United States are oblivious of it. You don't hear about it much in the media. And then when you're talking about cloning, if you tell them what that is, they look at you and say, oh, you're kidding. They're not doing that, are they? Why would they?
In Britain, the selling of cloned food requires special authorization because food safety authorities say not enough research has been done on its long-term impact on public health. And there are also worries over animal welfare, which is why there are moves to ban European farmers from ever using it.
If I was a European livestock producer, I would be concerned about losing access to a technology completely. To be told that, hey, you're never going to have access to that when your competitors in the United States, in New Zealand, in Australia, in Brazil, in Argentina are going to have access to that technology, I would be very concerned.
There are only 1,000 cloned animals among America's 100 million cattle, but its use is on the rise, and its supporters say that within 10 years it will become the norm in many parts of the world. Pallab Ghosh, BBC News, Boise, Idaho.
Cloned meat is good for you. Outbreak of typhoid fever in U.S. linked to fruit smoothies. This from the AP. A rare outbreak of typhoid fever has been linked to a frozen tropical fruit product used to make smoothies. Health officials reported last Thursday. 7 cases been confirmed, 3 in Cali, 4 in Nevada. 2 more in California are being investigated. This all according to the CDC. 5 victims drank milkshakes with something called Mamie fruit pulp, with links for you to read all about that and more on Goya Foods, the probable culprit, from nomore.org, KNOWMORE.org. Some of these packages have also been sold in Alaska, Arizona, California, Colorado, Hawaii, New Mexico, Nevada, Oregon, Texas, Utah, and Washington. And if we glance at Google News right now, it's on the top Salmonella cases almost triple as tainted eggs are recalled so far. 380 million eggs have been recalled. 2,000 reported illnesses. And our final post is a binge and purge, an ugly list of headlines, sour, sugar, and service. First, from dailyfinance.com, fructose slurping cancer could sour the soda business. And that's a wordy way of saying the word is out on high fructose corn syrup. All of the PR couldn't help them. Cancer cells feed on HFCS. They love it. And the word is out. GM Salmon, a company called Aqua Bounty Technologies, seeking FDA approval of fast-growing salmon. More on that from the LA Times. Sugar beet, beat down. Monsanto wins again. A judge issued a ban. Another one overturned it the next day. More on that from MorphCity.com. Democrats may use food stamp money to pay for Michelle's nutrition initiative. Isn't that nice? It's robbing Peter to pay Paul. As, again, things continue to fall apart. And let the meat cake becomes more and more apt as the weeks go by. U.S. food crops absorb toxic pharmaceuticals and personal care products from treated wastewater. More on that from naturalnews.com. WIC, women, infants, children, should include more organic, says the Senate. However, the Congress disagrees. More on that from naturalfoodsmerchandiser.com. And as if you didn't know, Ben & Jerry's natural ice cream is, of course, filled with unnatural ingredients. Again, from naturalnews.com. And we're going to go out with two bits of satire. The first from FarmWars.info, launching their public service announcement campaign.
This is a public service announcement. Hot, dry, and thirsty? Summer got you down. Don't want to be caught without water? Be prepared. Water can be very expensive, and FEMA wants to help. FEMA is now making available to residents of Agenda 21 Human Habitat Containment Areas the official FEMA 2010 Water Rationing Card, which is redeemable at your local retailer for drinking water any time of the day or night for a modest fee. So don't be caught high and dry. Be sure to carry your official FEMA water card with you wherever you go, so that you can have access to this valuable commodity without having to pay exorbitant black market prices. Don't be just another dehydration statistic. Have a safe day, and don't forget to hydrate. This public service announcement is brought to you by FarmWars.info. Any resemblance to reality is purely coincidental.
That's the, I believe, first installment from their new Welcome to the Future series of tongue-in-cheek PSAs, public service announcements. And as I believe we've said, we hope to have an interview with Barbara from FarmWars.info coming very soon as an exclusive for FoodWorldOrder.com. And like I said, we have two bits of satire, and that's how we're going to go out on this B-side, episode 182. It's August 20th, 2010. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, as well as CyberspaceWar.com and FoodWorldOrder.com. Of course, reminding you, as always, don't hate the media. Become the media. And we go out with a bit of satire from the one and only Onion. And you got to stay and catch the end about the all-seeing eye of the capstone of the pyramid as Starbucks begins sinister phase two of their operation. Take care.
It's the Onion Radio News. Starbucks begins its sinister phase two of operation. This is Doyle Redland reporting. After a decade of aggressive expansion throughout North America and abroad, Starbucks suddenly and unexpectedly closed its 56,423 worldwide locations today to prepare for what insiders call phase two of the company's long-range plan. Cynthia Valcant, Starbucks head of marketing, made this brief statement at a press conference earlier. earlier today.
We have enjoyed furnishing you with coffee-related beverages and are excited about the important role you play in our future plans.
Existing Starbucks franchises across the nation have been shuttered with high-strength titanium, and the well-known Starbucks logo has been slightly altered to present the familiar mermaid figure as a cyclopean mermaid whose all-seeing eye forms the apex of a world-spanning pyramid. Doyle Redland for The Onion Radio News, online at theonion.com.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Say out on my threat.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
Yep. This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.